The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org.
So, in terms of a Dharma talk today, I was thinking about what to say. And reflecting on how I felt, I felt that it's a little bit odd sometimes I feel being a meditation teacher. Because the two kind of, sometimes I feel like they go kind of in opposite directions. In meditation, when I sit, I often kind of, my mind gets kind of empty. And I don't have much to say. And why should you say anything? And then as a teacher, you're kind of expected to say something. And so how do I do that? So I could try to say something about nothing and try to explain how nothing is significant and important. And I'd like to start this way then, with a couple of stories. Suzuki Roshi was a teacher, Zen teacher, came from Japan. In the early 60s, he was teaching at the Japanese temple in Japantown. And at a neighboring Buddhist temple, a Japanese Pure Land temple, there was a young Japanese minister named Reverend Ogui, who had just come from Japan, spoke almost no English. And he started coming and sitting Zen meditation with Suzuki Roshi, which is very unusual, because in Japan, the different sects of Buddhism are quite segregated from each other. And he came and did Zazen and hung out with Suzuki Roshi for a few years. And at some point, maybe because he was a Buddhist priest or I don't know for what reason, Suzuki Roshi asked Reverend Ogui to give a Dharma talk at the Zen Center. And Reverend Ogui said, no, I can't. My English is not good enough. The next time Reverend Ogui came to the Zen Center to hear a Dharma talk from Suzuki Roshi, this is the Dharma talk he heard. Today is today. Today is not tomorrow. Tomorrow is not today. Today is not yesterday. Yesterday is not today. Today is today. It was a Dharma talk in five English words. And Reverend Ogui got the message. he told me the story many years later. So, it might seem like a silly story, but is there something profound about today is today? How often are we today? How often are we caught up in the future or the past? And, you know, do we ever question what is the future, what is the past? We can give tremendous amount of authority to the future and the past. And some people live mostly in the future. Some people live mostly in the past, live in the sense of where their mind is. And what is it? Does the future that you're planning for, how often does it occur? I know my futures, I've had a lot of futures that never happened. And those futures that never happened, what were they when they were happening? I mean, when I was thinking them, kind of a virtual reality. And so to be here now, today. So then Trudy Goodman, who's a Vipassana teacher in Los Angeles, told me this story. She went to a conference or convention of Buddhist teachers, leaders, priests, monks. I think she said it was in Vietnam, maybe in the 1990s. So there were Buddhist leaders from all over Asia, I guess, there. And Mahagosananda came to give a keynote speech at this big convention. Mahagosananda was one of the few Buddhist monks to survive the Pol Pot destruction of Cambodia. And he survived because he was living in Thailand, practicing and studying in Thailand. After the Pol Pot left, or downfall of it, he went back and tried to support and help his country and try to revive Buddhism and support it again there. He was a Gandhi-ish kind of person. I met him, beautiful man, very simple, humble, clean man. So he went back to Cambodia and became the supreme patriarch, because there was no one else to do it, right? Last man standing. And so here is supreme patriarch. He was asked to give the keynote speech at this convention. And so he came up on the podium and he began his talk. And I guess Cambodia, or maybe in Vietnam, I guess, has a French background, so maybe that's why he spoke in French. And what he started to do was to conjugate the verb to be in French. Je suis, tu es, nous être, I am, you are, we are, they are, he is, she is. And what Trudy Goodman said, that as he was speaking this, people started to cry. I am, you are, we are. I don't know how many English words that, or French words that takes to give that talk. But, what is it that can be profound, so profound that people cry, that in conjugating the French word, verb to be, what gets recognized in people's minds and their hearts? What do they hear? What do they touch? What happens to you? Just to be. I am. Story I've told sometimes of when I was 15, I lived for a while at a boarding school. It was in a very beautiful location, high in the mountains. Above us, it was the higher mountains with beautiful snow-capped mountains, and below, a beautiful green valleys, beautiful blue skies. It's a beautiful place to go to school, except that it was a reform school. And I remember I was walking on the dirt roads in the mountains with a friend, a 17-year-old friend, and I was just in awe of this place. It felt like, somehow something inside of me stopped, or wonder, or opened in wonder. And I turned to my friend without really wanting an answer, but just kind of to express what I was feeling. And I said, why are we here? Why are we here? Why are we alive? What is this? And unfortunately, for me, I think he turned to me and said, don't be silly. And something in my heart, I felt something just close up. It took many years for that part of me to open again. But why is any of this here? How often do you ask and look around? Why is this here? Any of this? What's going on here? It's kind of a miracle. It's been said that if you really want to experience a miracle, follow your next breath. To breathe is a miracle. To have a thought is a miracle. But how often do we find some profundity in just being alive? How often do we have a sense of amazement? Wow. Why does anything exist? How did this happen? A very significant moment in my life was on the Bay Bridge. I think it was like 1979, 78. And I was driving across the Bay Bridge with the car of Mel Weitzman, who was my Zen teacher. He had back then he had a 1960s Volkswagen Bug. We were driving across the Bay Bridge, and he was giving me a ride. And so he was asking me about myself, what I was up to, and I told him what I was doing. And that was kind of, maybe, I don't know if I was in the middle of telling him or finished telling him what I was doing, but he turned to me and he said, very simply, he said, just to be alive is enough. Just to be alive is enough. And that somehow just touched something inside of me and resonated, or it was so meaningful, and something inside of me just let go, relaxed. It's enough to be alive. How often do we have to prove ourselves? How often do we have to protect ourselves and do something different, or get something, or acquire something, or get be the right kind of person, or do all kinds of stuff. How often do we just being alive is enough? How often just being is enough? And I know from being a teacher on retreats, I mean, it happened this week as well, and happens, I've seen it myself, that people stop their busy lives to sit still for a week, sit still for half an hour, be mindful, be present, to meditate, do nothing, just be. And it's boring. Why would anyone want to do this? And not only sometimes it's boring, but there's resistance. And the lawyers in the mind come up to explain why this is the most ridiculous thing in the world to do, because there's important things to be done, important things to think, important things to avoid and run away from. There's all this stuff, you know, and so the mind has a tremendous capacity to be churning around and spinning around and thinking and planning and fantasizing and wanting and averting. And what I think happens often enough in some minds is that there's this momentum gets set in motion that's self-propelling. And if you sit down to meditate, be quiet, it doesn't just stop, but the spinning of the mind continues. And with that spinning of the mind comes, it spins because it's being fueled by things, like, it's not enough just to be. I have to get things, I have to fix things, I have to protect myself, I have to, you know, have pleasure, I have to have success, I have to have a relationship, I have to. And there's a lot of authority in that. And with that authority and with that momentum and with that movement of the mind and always wanting, it can seem that the meaning in our life, the success of our life, is at the other end of those thoughts, the fulfillment of those thoughts. And it's often it's like the gold pot at the end of the rainbow. You know, people look for the gold pot forever, but it's not to be found. And so, but to stop the searching, stop the looking, stop the wanting to do with the mind, the spinning of the mind, it can be a very difficult transition, because the authority is in getting and doing and wanting and thinking. That's where the value seems to be. And so to stop and interrupt that can seem very boring, can seem like nothing. It has no value. To have nothing has no value. Right? Obviously, nothing is nothing. Nothing is less than something. Isn't something better than nothing? But to sit and discover that having nothing in the mind, churning, agitated, wanting, averting, pushing, to let the mind come to rest, to let the desiring mind rest, and to open the eyes and see with wonder, see with amazement, to appreciate each other directly for being fellow sentient beings, as opposed to seeing each other through the filter of our desires and wants and aversions and fears and all these ideas we have. It's a beautiful thing. So one of the things that happens on retreat oftentimes is that by the end of the retreat, not necessarily in the middle, so much has dropped away that when people finally break silence and talk, they talk with so much friendship and warmth. So much of the usual social ways in which people see each other fall away and meet more as equals. It's a beautiful thing. So what does it take? What perspective does it take? What approach does it take? Where I am or today is today, or just to be alive is enough, expresses something really deep and meaningful. And what prevents it? What are the protests that says, well, that's not, can't be enough, that's not, I have important things to do, I'm an important person. I can't stop. Important things to do. So that's all I have for today. I am, you are, and wonderfully, we are together. Thank you for being here today.